Stay tuned for Our Recourse with Brian Gale, coming up next.
Amen.
Hi, I'm Brian Gale, and today we're going to be talking about the astonishing revival of Catholic classical education in America, and in our Catholic schools, even here in Philadelphia in particular. I'm joined by my dear friend and fellow Knight of the Immaculate, Tim Renane. Tim is a co-founder and chairman of Regina Academies, a network of four private Catholic classical educational institutions in suburban Philadelphia with over 400 students. He's a retired Rome and Haas engineer and the father of 9 children and 24 grandchildren. He's also active in a number of pro-life causes and one of the Catholic Church's leading authorities on intelligent design. But that's for another day. Tim, welcome. It's good to have you as a guest on my very first show with a guest in this series.
Hey, Brian. Great to be with you.
Thank you so much. Let's talk a little bit about classical education, and what is it for our listeners? What is its mission? Is it trying to solve a problem in education today? If so, what is that problem?
All right. Are you asking me to answer all those questions?
We are.
You'd be the only one that could.
Well, what is classical education? First of all, it's a revival. It's recovering the lost tools of learning, which was the famous essay by Dorothy Sayers. It's a looking back at the history of human thought and pulling out the very best principles, the very best knowledge to put together the threads of thought that created the Western civilization. It's the foundation of Western civilization, to bring all that back and to make thinkers of our students, you know, give them the tools to lead others, to be the leaders in thought for others. So, of course, it has to do with the way you teach, the Socratic method. It has to do with the subjects you teach, which is a lot famous literature, a lot of some logic, some forensics, debate techniques, rhetoric. Of course, real strong in math and science and in a very basic, competent way. It has to do with the teachers and the Socratic method, the way you teach kids, the way you get them engaged in the classroom, the great books that they read, all that sort of thing. And, you know, it's a time when education is somewhat in crisis. We hear, on the one hand, we hear things like the Common Core and what that brings, the utilitarian non-thinking, if you will, approach to education. Of course, it produces, and depending on how that is implemented, it still produces and can produce successful people. But we think there's another way and a better way, and we want to give that option to our parents. And we think it's a critical time in our history. If you look at our politics and you look at many other things, we think it's a very critical time for us to be thinking along those lines, to give people an alternative and to give them the reasons why Western civilization became what it is. So let me stop there for a minute and see where you want to take this, Brian.
Well, you know, you mentioned Common Core. It's become a campaign issue, and I'm anxious to have you explain just what that is and why it is a campaign issue this year in the presidential elections.
Well, you know, to my mind, I'm not an expert on the subject of Common Core, but it's fairly amorphous. It starts out as, you know, they talk about preparing students to take jobs in our present society in a very utilitarian, pragmatic way, and teaching them how to read informational texts and informational literature rather than the great works and the great thinkers, so that you're kind of making, in some ways, an automatron rather than an individual who can think and lead and question and innovate and create. It has a lot of other fingers that can get into it. If you look at the literature that they're asked to read, the resources that they're asked to use, many times that has an agenda, has a particular worldview that some parents may not want. They may want the exact opposite. We also hear a lot of horror stories about math. Again, Common Core math, there's not really a Common Core math, but we hear a lot of the way it's being implemented in many schools as Common Core math is really confusing the students, making them take the long way around to solve a problem and lay out a multi-stepped approach to solving a problem that you should have memorized in your brain. So there are lots of problems with it. People are dealing with it in various ways. One way to deal with it is to approach the Regina Academies and join our grand crusade into the classical approach to educating the future generation.
How did the Regina Academies get started here in Philadelphia? By the way, they're just in Philadelphia, right?
At this point in time, they're just in Philadelphia. We do have inquiries from other places, one of which is New York City. But right now we have four in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. Started 13 years ago. Our first academy is our Regina Caeli Academy, which is in Abington now, third year in Abington. It's in its 13th year as a school. Parents were traveling a long way from two other areas of the diocese, one being the Downingtown area, one being Ardmore, western suburbs. So two schools started three and 4 years after our school. So those were the three schools, and then we're in the second year of our fourth school, which is St. John the Baptist in Ottsville, which is the northern reaches of the Archdiocese. It was an archdiocesan school at the end of 1 year, and the next day it was a Regina Academy, all through the instigation of the Archdiocese, which was really a great thing for us. And that school has been there. There's been a Catholic school in that location in Ottsville for 240 years. And those parents and parishioners just refused to close the school. And they've now turned it into a classical academy. And they've probably added about 50% enrollment in those 2 years so far and doing well. So that's a little bit of the history.
Well, Tim, what I know about the Regina Academies is that the foundress and her husband, actually, Paul and Barbara Henkels, are right. Really kind of the visionaries behind this whole thing. I'm not asking you to speak for them, but what is it that they saw that they wanted to begin and develop here in the Philadelphia Archdiocese?
Well, I think it's kind of a state of mind. It is hard to speak for someone else. I think a lot of us saw problems. We saw a deterioration of Catholic education to some extent, or at least in some schools. In some places, we had a certain frustration of wanting to be able to do something positive. And I think we all just decided, this group of people decided that the best way is to do something positive, and that was to start our own school and try to bring back some of the things, the lost tools of learning, if you will, that have been that needed to be recovered and refueled and reignite a new enthusiasm for the faith. And of course, we're doing this, starting these schools at a time when it's hard to find a new Catholic school beginning. As you know, most of them are closing, and they're closing in big numbers. So a lot of what we've done, I think, is a very miraculous thing. It's been blessed, I think, from on high. I think Our Lady has really guided it and protected it. And when people from other cities hear what we're doing, we were just in New York City talking to folks that are running a classical high school there, and they're just amazed that you could have four great schools in one archdiocese, and new ones being investigated all the time. So the outsiders looking in give us some enthusiasm, you know, about what we've accomplished. Sometimes you don't have the opportunity to step back and appreciate that. So anyway, that's a little bit of I think, where people came from to get this thing started, get it off the ground.
Well, I understand the classical educational model, the curriculum and so forth, and I want to just get back to that if we could. In the promotional literature, the first thing you read is that these schools are authentically Catholic. What does that mean?
Well, that is, that can be taken, of course, the wrong way, but it begins with interweaving the Catholic faith. It's not just a subject. Interweave it into everything, certainly into history in a big way. The history of Western civilization is very much contributed to and guided by the Church, by Christianity in general, and specifically the Catholic Church. So we avoid state-funded textbooks, for example, that don't include the Christian point of view on things like that. We use a Catholic textbook series that gives the impact of the Church and Christian thinking at that point in time, and sometimes they're saints, sometimes they're Christian leaders that sort of, you know, had a big impact at that point in history. It's certainly taking into account the past, the great philosophers and theologians and thinkers and historians that had a huge impact on society, on culture, and on humanities, on what it means to be human. The catechetical materials, of course, have to be orthodox. We use the Baltimore Catechism, the Compendium. We use, of course, Faith and Life series. We use Scott Hahn and Jeff Cavin's Bible Timeline, Ascension Press materials. But we know that materials don't produce Catholics by themselves. And therefore, we have to make sure that we have authentic Catholic teachers. So we search far and wide for people with a passion for the faith, and that's who we hire. And of course, everyone, which is very, very important, everyone, including the secretary who answers the phone, all of us take an oath to the magisterium of the Church, an oath of fidelity to the magisterial teaching of the Catholic faith every year. We knew that, and we even signed a piece of paper saying that. So,
is that important? Is that an important thing to do?
Well, we would think it is. In fact, we think it creates a lot of unity in the school. You know, people in the faculty room are allowed to talk about their faith openly and share it because they agree on the essentials, on the core principles of the faith. And as we know, there's been several dioceses in the country just in the last couple of years where the archbishop or the cardinal tried to make it a requirement for all the teachers in the Catholic schools to take an oath to the magisterium. And in both cases, I don't believe either one of those two that are in my mind have been actuated at this point in time a couple of years later, even though they're still working on it.
Wow.
And that's because there's so much rebellion and kickback on it that people, why should people be made to do that? And it tells you something about what, the culture of Catholic education today, perhaps. But I don't think most people are aware of that a lot of people in these schools around the country refuse to take an oath like that, which to us would be common sense.
You know, as I read the literature on these schools, they talk about this, as you mentioned, classically integrated curriculum with the faith at the core. But it goes on to say that the students read Homer and Plato and Aristotle and Euclid and Virgil and Dante and Chaucer and Shakespeare and St. Francis of Assisi and St. Thomas Aquinas and St. Teresa of Avila and Dostoevsky and G.K. Chesterton, that they study the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Catechism of the Catholic Church, history, literature, philosophy, and theology. And all of this is, quote, braided together, end quote. Is this not happening in other schools?
Well, to answer your question, well, I think we know it's not happening. Back when you and I were in school, I remember shortly after we left school it being said that we're not going to teach Thomas Aquinas in his five ways, his five proofs for God's existence, and I think that's just a very small anecdote of what happened, you know, to Catholic education. The interesting thing is that the kids do read all these things that you just mentioned. Some cases it's a chapter or two or three chapters out of a book. But in many cases, it's the complete book, it's the complete work, it's the primary source, as they say. It's incredible what these students can accomplish. We were just in a classical academy up in New York. High percentage of Hispanic and minority and black students who are doing incredibly well studying these things and articulating the thought of Aristotle and Thomas Aquinas just today. I'm telling you, just today, I couldn't believe what I was hearing in the classical school. So that is an impressive list of stuff you just ticked off, but it's there. We're very open with the curriculum. We're very open with what the kids read. There's no secrets. The kids perform extremely well, and when they get to college, they just really, really excel.
When you say they perform well, are you talking about on national standardized testing or admittance to their school of choice? How exactly are they measured?
Well, admittance to the school of choice. In fact, we were just talking to, and of course, the national standardized testing, the ACTs and the SATs. People from classical academies excel on the average against when they're compared with kids in public school, parochial schools, or even private schools. They still, on the average, do better. They do really well in the STEM, you know, the science and engineering. That's what the schools are looking for. We were just talking to the guidance counselor, helping kids get into high school or get into college from the high school that we visited, this classical high school in New York. And she was saying how impressed the colleges are because they're looking for thinkers. They're not looking for kids that have taken AP courses and were given material that they could spit back. They're looking for kids that are thinkers and philosophers, the kids that they know will be future leaders, which will bring prestige and donations to their schools. That's the kind of student they're looking for. And when they send off information to a college, either for a student, they give a little description of the courses that this child has taken, as well as another piece of paper that describes the curriculum, describes what the kids have accomplished, describes the average scores from the school, and the kids do really well from these classical schools in terms of scholarships, in terms of the schools they want to get into. You know, you're always looking for the really elite schools. You're always looking for that edge. Stand out and have a classical education and to study the things and read the books that these kids have read. Believe me, we were in two classrooms just this morning, and we came out shaking our heads saying, I don't think that is taught in college. You know, that's the kind of level of dialogue that was going on. So again, we're always searching, we're always benchmarking, we're always trying to improve what we do. The best way to do that is to look at what other people are doing, and that's what we were about this morning up in New York City.
Tim, before we open the lines, we have some listeners who are interested in asking some questions. I'm just curious, are there certain characteristics represented in the families that come and with their children and enter one of these academies?
Yes, of course, they're very discriminating parents in terms of really worrying about their kids, what their kids are going to learn in school, what ideas are going to be put into their head, and, of course, whether they're going to attain, whether what they learn is going to allow them to attain eternal salvation. Some people come for the classical. Some people discover the classical after they get there and discover what it produces. Some people have been to several other schools and are looking for a school that can meet their special needs. But by and large, the parent, the majority of parents that come for us, they come for the Catholic formation. We have a very, very strong Catholic formation and a reputation for it. Our teachers, our administrators, the families that send their children there, a lot of them are connected to intellectual pursuits, to universities, to archdiocesan jobs, the seminary, you know, places like that. So we've gained a reputation for a place that can be trusted.
So much of education is about trust. It's also about expectation, isn't it? And speaking of that, we've got some listeners, I think, wanting to call. The telephone lines, again, 610-527-2906 or 1-888-34-FAITH, which translates into 1-888-343-2484. The lines are open. If you have questions for this remarkable man and these this very unusual and innovative and quite effective series or network of academies, please don't hesitate to ask. Tim, while we're waiting, I have to ask about the parental involvement, because I know so much about education is the parents themselves being directly involved and staying involved in their children's education. I presume that is the case in these academies.
Yes, it is the case. We have a lot of adjunct teachers, professors, if you will. Some of them are parents. We have a parent teaching the forensics course. We have parents teaching the logic course. These are people who are, you know, engineers or lawyers, professional people that come in. A number of cases, the adjuncts are men, so we have, you know, this male influence, especially as our young men, you know, reach high school age. They may run the after-school things like chess and robotics and sewing class, or maybe computer training either in the summer or after school. We have our parents involved, and as much as we can get them there. We have penance and pasta once a month where whole families come and go to confession and then have a pasta meal together. As you know, Brian, we encourage our fathers to go on retreat with us on the Knights of Immaculata once a year. We have a number of fathers who are joining us and more all the time. We bring in outside speakers for the families, Father Chris Walsh, Bill Dunaghy of Theology of the Body, both well-known, popular folks around the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. We teach people how to prevent their kids from getting to bad material on their computer and on the cell phone. We will bring them in and give them instruction on how to take care of those problems. So those are some of the ways that we have parents involved. At the same time, it's not a homeschool co-op. We don't allow parents to run the school. We look for mature people that can help us to do special, mature, and creative things with the students.
And they're growing. If I'm understanding you correctly, I think I hear you saying that not only are the schools each individually, the four of them, growing, but also there are new groups of families that want to open these schools in places where they're not currently.
Yeah, we're right. That's we get two or three inquiries along those lines every year. Every couple of years, one of them comes into fruition. There's one in the making, which we hope will come into fruition very shortly in the Princeton to Yardley corridor. We have, of course, the collaboration now with Cardinal O'Hara High School. I know you're going to have the president of Cardinal O'Hara on the line here in a few minutes. This is spreading, and there are, since 1991, there's something like 260, do I have that number right? Or is it 300? No, I think it's 300 total schools. Around 240 are evangelical, around 80 or 85 are Catholic classical schools. So this movement is growing as more and more people hear about it, and as we have graduates with tremendous success in college and in their careers, and we get a track record and more educated people who have heard about it and want to teach in these schools, or were educated this way and want to start a school for their own family. Those are the kind of things that are happening across the country and happening locally, and I think when it happens, it's a miracle. I really believe that in this day and age, to start a school with all the roadblocks in the way, the cost to collect the right group of people to lead it and to teach in it, it's always a miracle, and it's always a wonderful thing to see.
Well, you mentioned Regina Chesterton Academy at Cardinal O'Hara, and yes, we are hoping to have Tom Fertel join us after the break, and that is a first for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. Actually, a high school, or at least a school within a school, an honors track, as I understand.
Yes, it is. The teachers will be carefully chosen. The teachers will be, they will take the oath to the Magisterium of the Catholic Church. They will receive special training. We have a big week-long seminar, symposium type training for all our Regina academies and for schools all across the country. There'll be 700 teachers that are teaching the classical approach around the country involved in that this summer. A number of the professors at O'Hara will be adjunct professors, people with special expertise to teach the special courses that are required, and the training will be ongoing, and every year the program will improve another notch. So we're hoping to see that get off the ground with some energy and to grow very rapidly.
Jim, I don't want to let you go without asking you about this event coming up. I see Wednesday, May 25 at the Union League. Laura Ingram, you have Laura Ingram coming in to speak for one of these schools and their audiences?
Yes, Regina Chaley actually is going to be our fundraiser for the year, but it is an opportunity for all our schools to get some visibility. Laura Ingram will be talking. I think it begins at 6 o'clock, I believe. I have to check, but it's at the Union League, 6 a.m. on the 25th. Partner in crime, if you will, Raymond Arroyo, has actually requested to come along and share remarks with the audience.
He asked?
He actually asked. We did not ask him. He works fairly closely with, I think, with Laura Ingram on a number of things. I always enjoy seeing Laura's miraculous medal around her neck when we see her on Fox News. But she's excited about the story, about the Regina Academy story, and so is Raymond. They want to come and support what we're doing. It's going to be an exciting evening. We're going to have one of our students do her declamation. We're going to give some people insights into what we're doing. It's cocktail and hors d'oeuvres. And we sure enjoy having anyone in your audience that is interested to come out and support what we're doing and learn about what brought Laura Ingram into the Catholic Church.
Tim, where can folks who are interested get more information about this event on May 25 at the Union League? It's called, by the way, the title, I love the title, Reclaiming the American Spirit, A Renewal of Faith, Family, and Education.
Right. I don't have the phone number handy in my brain, but it's the Regina Chaley Academy. Regina, you can go YRCA.com or ReginaChaleyAcademy.org or .com or call school. I'm sure people can easily get the phone number and find the event online and call and make a reservation. We'd absolutely love to have you. And we'll try to put people at a table where there are going to be some stimulating talk and discussion and meet and network. We'll have people representing a lot of different initiatives and apostolates around the Archdiocese there, people from the Kingsmen, for example, from Ascension Press, and many other groups which are escaping my brain right now. But boy, thank you for bringing it up, Brian. May 25th, 6 o'clock at the Union League Regina Chaley Academy.
And Tim, just quickly, what's the website for people who want to learn more about the Regina Academies?
Well, we have a website. We have a website called ReginaAcademies.com. We also have a new website for the Regina Chesterton Academy at Cardinal O'Hara, and all the links to the various schools' websites, of course, can be gotten from the Regina Academies .com website. The phone number, by the way, if anybody has a pencil for Regina Chaley Academy, is 215-277-1386. That's 277-1386, 215 area code.
Beautiful. Tim, I'm very, very grateful for you taking the time. I know it was an early morning for you. Did you go up to New York this morning early, or did you go up yesterday?
No, I actually went up last night. I went up last night so we could make 8 o'clock mass with the students at the school and share in the prayer and watch how the school day starts and all that sort of thing.
So long day. I know you're putting in an awful lot of time on the Regina Academies. A lot of people are very, very grateful to you for that, Tim. And will you promise to come back and tell us a little bit about intelligent design somewhere down the line?
I can't wait. Looking forward to it, Brian.
All right. Thank you, my friend. God love you.
All right. Thank you. God bless. Thanks for all the good work you guys are doing there. Bye-bye.
Don't go away.
All right. I'm going to ask our listeners not to go away.
We thank God for our one, holy, Catholic, and Apostolic Church, where Jesus remains present to us until the end of the age, in word and in sacrament. Catholic Radio shares in the ministry of the Church to proclaim the gospel to the ends of the earth. And in his sign, Catholic Radio, has been doing so for over 30 years. Kathleen McCarthy and In His Sign have been empowered by the Holy Spirit to bring the fire of God's healing love to the world through Catholic Radio and the Internet. With God's grace, His word goes out, healing hearts and transforming lives. In His Sign proclaims the culture of life loud and clear in a culture of death. The ministry's mission is to evangelize, catechize, and to be a voice for those who have no voice, proclaiming the truth that will set all people free. To our faithful family and friends who stand with us, thank you for being missionaries with us by supporting In His Sign Catholic Radio. Without your monthly support of prayer and financial giving, our mission would not be able to continue. Our mission voice would be silenced. To our new listeners, please prayerfully consider joining our monthly circle of family and friends by partnering with us financially each month. All donations are completely tax deductible and go directly to our daily expenses, like the purchase of radio airtime and keeping the lights on. Kathleen McCarthy and all of the staff at In His Sign, except Kathleen's administrator, donate all of their time and talent on a volunteer basis at no expense to the ministry. Donations to In His Sign Catholic Radio may be sent to 136 Garrett Avenue, Rosemont, PA 19010, or you can donate securely at inhissign.com. Remember, without your prayers and financial support, our mission voice will be silenced.
Okay, we're back now. By the way, what a voice. Hey, speaking of our voice would be silenced, that is Dennis Nolan. What a remarkable man he is, and isn't that some voice he's got that God gave him? We are on now with Tom Fertel, who is the president of Cardinal O'Hara High School in Springfield, a remarkable young man, father of six children, by the way. I should point that out first. The job he did at the diocesan school in Lancaster is what drew the attention of the Archdiocese and Cardinal O'Hara in particular. He just turned that school around, and now he's at O'Hara. I think he's in his second year. And he is in the process of taking O'Hara to the next level. But the big news on Action News, as they say, is the fact that you've got a unique joint venture that you're about to announce today and get underway immediately, as I understand it. Tom, welcome.
Thank you very much, Brian. Glad to be with you.
Tell us a little bit about this joint venture with Regina Academies, and if I understand it correctly, Chesterton Academies out in Minneapolis, I think, and Cardinal O'Hara. What is this?
Absolutely, Brian. Very, very exciting. So essentially, It's a collaborative effort between Cardinal Harrah High School and the Virginia Academies, and kind of in cooperation with the Chesterton network of schools as well, as far as our curriculum and support. We're launching a classical academy program within Cardinal Harrah High School. Now, I say within, I don't mean, you know, just kind of as tenants, but in a full cooperative program where the students will be attending O'Hara as O'Hara students, but their curriculum and formation activities are all through this Regina Chesterton program. So it's there's all kinds of, you know, terms people use to describe it, school within a school, an educational track, et cetera, and they all bear some truth. But we do know that it's very unique. As far as we know, this is the first model of its type in the country, and it's a great example of what happens when like-minded people come together for a greater good, in this case, the education and formation of our young saints in training, that can really can make things happen. And in the short year that we've been working on this, we've come miles, and this is now becoming a reality.
Well, Tom, we just had Tim Renane on, the chairman of Regina Academies, and he tells us that this wasn't their idea. This was your idea, that you're the visionary behind this innovation. What inspired
you? Well, Tim's too kind. I'd like to say it's a jump ball. Because really, at the same time that the Regina Academies were looking for, you know, an option for the high school, especially down within this region, it was already on my heart as well. Having interjected some classical elements in my former school, when we laid out our strategic plan for O'Hara, we definitely had down the idea of looking into great books or some type of classical track. Now, again, really didn't know what that would look like or how it would work. In fact, the line in the strategic plan said, investigate and look into. Well, once I met the good folks at Regina Academies, the looking into was over, and it was a perfect partnership. So I think it came from both directions. In God's own time, you know, we were brought together and made it happen.
What are your expectations for the school and how it would impact the larger body of students at Cardinal O'Hara, Tom?
Well, there's no doubt that, you know, in the, I don't know whatever to call the non-traditional program, the non-classical program, you know, the other program or the standard program. But, you know, truth be told, of course, we want renewal everywhere. And so even without the classical program, you know, I definitely, in my time there, we've been on a journey of renewal in our academics, in our spiritual life, Catholic identity, et cetera. You know, it's a school with a very storied history. Has done very well, has the typical challenges of Catholic high school. So we've already considered ourselves, you know, in a period of renewal. This is just another phenomenal step in that same direction that will provide something unique. And yes, absolutely. Do I see this as a catalyst for even further growth for all students and for all of our constituents and faculty? Absolutely. You know, it's definitely not something that's going to be, you know, that will be hidden in the basement in the corner somewhere. This is you know, something we're very proud about, and you know, definitely want to see crossover and cross pollination, and see it as something that would add value and strength in many ways to our entire program.
Now, I'm seeing that there are three partners in this initiative. Could you break that down for us? Who are they? What are they about?
Well, sure. So again, so first is Cardinal Harrah High School, which is the I guess the owner or the owning entity. You know, we are one of the 17 high schools in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. And so we're the official school, so students are enrolled in Cardinal Harrah High School and receive a diploma from Cardinal Harrah High School, et cetera. And then, of course, the second partner is the Regina Academies, Regina Network of Schools. And so there's some oversight there in that the decisions made on the curriculum and even the hiring of our director, which we're moving closer to. There's Regina folks who are a part of that. In fact, there's some members of the Regina professional and volunteer board members that are on our board at O'Hara now. So we've kind of solidified that relationship, mm-hmm. You know, to make sure it's not just, again, a come and go idea, but something that has some lasting stability. And then lastly, the Chesterton Academy, of course, out in Wisconsin, and now seeing Chesterton schools pop up around the country, you know, we liked their curriculum model. So we have, it's not a franchisee arrangement per se, but we do, you know, we have purchased the rights to, you know, used the Chesterton name and of course the curriculum, of course, which we, you know, will modify and tuck for the local level, but we definitely see them as a partner in this as well. So there's the three partners in this effort.
Well, you know, and looking at the literature, it fascinates me, the curriculum overview. Freshman year, the focus is the ancient world, the Greeks and the Romans. The sophomore year is the early medieval period. That's what the literature and the history and philosophy and theology and so forth. Junior year, the high Middle Ages to the Renaissance. And senior year, I guess, the Renaissance to this modern period in which we live, or postmodern period, as some would say. What a fascinating way to approach education for our children.
Well, absolutely. And it's as you've already kind of outlined there, it's very rich. It's very deep, and it's very relevant. I think that's one of the lost treasures, which we're hoping to, you know, of course, you know, recover here in this effort, is that that perspective and studying, you know, the history in those manners, it does provide context, it does provide meaning, it does provide value. You know, we don't know, we can't really understand our current world and our current conditions unless we know, you know, the evolution of our history and of our civilization. And then, if I may, the beautiful part as well, of course, is as you're studying, you know, in history, the ancient history, your theology class, as you're looking at the Old Testament, you know, you're finding the parallels, and your literature and studying the ancient writers, and your philosophy class, the ancient philosophers. So that seamless approach is so so much richer than like a lot of modern education, which tends to compartmentalize things and puts it, you know, each class is its own subject matter, its own textbook, and its own material. But here, you know, what you're getting in each of your disciplines is reinforced by the others, and those common themes permeate through them, which makes it a much more holistic and much more integrated program, which, of course, the coup de grace then is that the faith element, of course, is woven throughout all of the disciplines, as it should be if you're truly going to study these disciplines. So just an incredible, incredible opportunity for our young people, something to feast on, as opposed to just get, you know, appetizers and hors d'oeuvres of education. We're bringing our young people to the feast.
I see that the vision for this initiative, Regina Chesterton Academy at Cardinal O'Hara High School, beginning in September, I take it, right?
Correct. Absolutely.
I see the vision is to prepare leaders for the new springtime. Tom, what's that about?
Well, you know, you go back to the earliest, you know, preachings and writings of, you know, Pope John Paul on the springtime, and you do evangelization, and, you know, that who's going to answer the call? Who's going to usher in a period of rebirth in the church? Very prolific in his writings and his talking about this. And I think the Chesterton Academy, you know, we say, you know, we are. We're going to be part of that. We're going to plant those seeds. We're going to develop the young people who will graduate from the program and go out and be those leaders. They'll go out into the work world. They'll go out and pursue further education, equipped with the tools that they need to be effective evangelizers, to be evangelists, to be effective and responsible people of faith, to be apologists, to be able to not just to defend the faith, but to give the reason for their joy. And, you know, so that's it's doing our part. And definitely it's the time is right as our, you know, society and culture has more and more challenges and more philosophies and people working against who we are, what we believe. And yet there's still grace abounding in the number of ministries and programs that are coming up all throughout our country and definitely throughout the Philadelphia region. And it's just wonderful, and what a great blessing to be a part of that.
Well, what are the general problems that you would educators, teachers in particular, face with the children today, the young students coming into the high school?
Yeah, I think a lot of it, you know, is the what's the purpose? It sounds so maybe cliche or so, you know, 10,000 feet, but what is the purpose of high school? And I think that's a fundamental question that every school needs to answer. A lot of people think that, you know, a high school is primarily purpose is to get to get someone prepared for a job, or to get them even prepared, for a career. And I think we missed a boat when we look at high school in those ways. High school is about formation. It's about formation of the intellect, but also of the spirit. And it's not the intellect in terms of knowing stuff or trying to acquire a certain body of knowledge of facts and figures, but it's about how to think, about how we process, about what is good and what does it mean to be good in the world, and what is my purpose, and what is the greater meanings and purposes of life, and all these issues that need to be tackled by all people, intellectually and spiritually, before moving on to more pragmatic things of careers and even vocations, etc. So I think our job is to prepare the young person in all those dimensions, socially, spiritually, intellectually, to be prepared to go on to whether it's work world or the further study. But the colleges, will tell you, will make them into or educate them to be doctors or lawyers or engineers. Give us young people who can think and reason and argue and speak and debate and solve problems. And that's the purpose. And I think that is what the true beauty of the classical approach is, that it prepares young minds in a deeper and richer way.
I got to tell you, I just find it fascinating that here you have this classical model that took the world from the point before Christ with the Greeks right through the Romans into the Middle Ages, the Renaissance, the Enlightenment, the modern period, all of it. Just with terrific results. I mean, just the leading prelates and authors and kings and tradesmen and all of these people, wonderful leaders over the years, the centuries, being trained in this method. And all of a sudden, we hit 1950 or so, and it's out the window. And there's a new model, and it's called the progressive model, and it's about training the young students in a more practical, more fun way, as I understand it, for the real world, for doing the jobs that the industry and their countries, etc., would require of them. What happened?
Yeah, I think you hit something, an excellent point there in about it being fun, and it makes me think of, we somehow gave up on our young people. We somehow, at some point, somebody or some group, or who knows, rationalized that, they can't handle this, or they can't go deeper. And it has to be, short and cute and in sound bites and entertaining even on some levels. And what a disservice. I mean, what a disservice we're doing to young people and to their, intellectual and spiritual, social, formation by robbing them. And I think that's my little analogy earlier about the feast. We're giving them crumbs. And if you've worked with young people in any degree, in my capacity as an educator, as a youth minister, a campus minister, our young people want a feast. They want the full course. They can handle it. They're hungry. They're hungry for knowledge. They're hungry for their growth and development. They're hungry for knowing about their faith and knowing the deeper questions and deeper answers. And we somehow, for whatever reason, as you said, I don't know the reasons. We've robbed them of that, and they're starving as a result.
Well, you read the history of the progressive model. John Dewey, Horace Mann, I guess, before him in the mid-1800s, John Dewey in the early 1900s, and how he was able to convince a critical mass of professional educators to shift gears and to veer left, if you will, into something that is really more of a training curriculum with a light package surround, I guess, of the classics, and veer off course and end up with children that can't read, can't write, and just don't perform well, no matter how much money we put into it.
Yeah, it's a moving away from basic skills, and of course, there's no doubt that education has changed, and some elements, need to change, and it can still be enhanced. If you're doing even in classical education, a smart board on a wall that could show you beautiful pictures of Michelangelo's work is still of value. So it's not, we're not totally moving away from everything, but we've bought into this idea that it's about a pragmatic view of young people's role and trying to say there's an essential body of knowledge or set of skills that they must know to. I don't know. It's you're right. It's almost like a massive conspiracy that somehow pulled off before we knew it. And luckily, fortunately, we and others are caught on to almost the lie that is there, and are realizing that our young people can are ready for so much more. And we have the noble task of bringing that to them.
It's it seems like a corrective to a corrective. The corrective didn't work, the progressive model, after 2,500 years of success with the classical model. And now, slowly but surely, there is a little pin light, if it were, as it were, into a new approach that is really an old approach.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And even if you want to make the argument that there is that pragmatic about what the industry needs and what college needs, when you listen to the industry and you listen to college, again, they will tell you, we want thinkers, we want deep thinkers, we want problem solvers, we want people who can think through an issue or a topic or a problem. And the irony is the progressive model claims to do that, but it doesn't. It locks the minds in a box, so to speak, and very, very linear, one direction, very flat. And so as a result, what you find is students from the classical programs do exceptionally well as they move on to higher learning because they are equipped. They are equipped intellectually, of course, and spiritually to handle bigger issues and bigger problems and bigger questions and find solutions. So the very sets of skills that higher ed and private industry is screaming for are the ones best developed, through a classical approach.
All right, I'm on with Tom Fertle, the president of Cardinal O'Hara High School. We're talking about his new initiative, Regina Chesterton Academy, due to start in September. The announcement today in a broad way on this show, which we are very much appreciate, Tom. And if our listeners have questions, the numbers are 610-527-2906, or if you're out of the footprint, as they say, 1-888-343-2484. That would be the toll-free number. Tom, what's the reaction among the teachers, the faculty, and administrators at O'Hara to this new initiative?
Well, absolutely, absolutely positive. We've got a dedicated staff, a motivated staff. As with anything in education, of course, anything new, you've got a few people who look and say, well, what's that all about, and what is that, going to mean for me? But the beauty of the program is, it's not something that's top-down, forced upon everybody. The teachers who have the interest and desire and the heart to embrace, the academy and to venture into the Socratic method of teaching and et cetera, are welcome to do so. We'll be supplementing as needed with other hires, from those in the community who have a specific, classical education background. So it's the best of both worlds. But I've got a very dedicated staff. This is a staff that, when surveyed about the characteristics they were most wanted in their principal, we hired a new principal last year, Catholic identity was the number one element that they wanted, the number one point in the new principle. So that tells me a lot about the people at O'Hara. There's definitely a commitment to the faith and to the young people. So this is definitely not outside the that realm. And I think the overwhelming majority, of course, absolutely see that and embrace that.
Tom, we have Angela on line two with a question. Would you be kind enough to take it?
Certainly.
Angela.
Hi, I'm listening to your program. I'm in the car, so I'm going to just quickly ask my question of Tom and hang up and listen. I find it fascinating that this progressive model occurred in the 1950s, and I'm kind of curious as to why you think the church didn't catch on quicker or realize what was going on and didn't try to stop it earlier. And I said, I'm in the car, so I'm going to hang up and listen.
You know, Brian, I didn't get all of that. Could you help me out with?
Yes, Angela asks, why didn't the church see this coming and head it off so that it would slow the erosion of the faith and really the academic quality of the Catholic education?
Wow. Well, that's one for another day.
The good news, Tom, is we only have about a minute left. So
there you go. No, it is a much deeper question, which goes into the change of the Catholic population from being, you know, typically blue collar middle class, and the rise of Catholics into white collar upper middle classes. How did that change our view of church and college and all? I mean, I think there's a lot that could be explored and discussed, but I think that's part of it. Our church, our demographics of the church membership has changed dramatically, and not to mention, just the 60s and 70s in general, in terms of our political systems and our culture wars. And then you take in, the church post Vatican II, and what did Vatican II really say and not say? I mean, we could go on and on, and I'm sure there's something in all of that that would shed some light onto how we got to where we are.
I love that question, Angela. I really do.
Yeah, very deep.
It is one for another day. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you right now, Tom, that we're going to have to say goodbye to you, and we're also going to say thank you for your taking. I know what your schedule is like. I've seen you over there. For you to take 30 minutes out and make this announcement today to the broader Philadelphia Archdiocese office audience is a very special treat for us, and we thank you for that.
You're very welcome, and thank you for the opportunity, Brian, very much. Much appreciated.
All right, that was Tom Fertel, the president of Cardinal O'Hara High School, and my understanding is that we are going to say goodbye to you. We're going to thank you for listening, and we will be with you next week on Our Recourse.
Thank you for tuning in to Our Recourse. We are grateful to our sponsors and to Kathleen McCarthy and In His Sign Catholic Radio for bringing this show into your homes and cars. Please remember In His Sign Catholic Radio in your prayers and charitable contributions so we can continue to offer authentic Catholic programming 2 hours every day, 5 days a week. We can be reached at 610-527-2906 or on the web at inhissign.com. Join us next week at this same time for another edition of Our Recourse with Brian Gale. Stop.
the tomb, Jesus came with grace and majesty.